screaming at WBAI.org. LSB meeting tomorrow evening, starting at 7 p.m. So you'll want to go to WBAI.org, where you can find information to connect to that meeting if you so desire. 9 p.m. WBAI New York, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now for the aforementioned Cat Radio Cafe.
This is Cat Radio Cafe, a salon of the arts exploring the creative bounty of New York from WBAI Radio 99.5 on the FM dial. I'm Janet Coleman, and you are?
David Dozer.
The displaced playwright. And on tonight's show, we'll be joined by filmmaker Lynn Sachs and poet Paulo Javier to discuss their collaboration on Lynn's docufilm Swerve, set in a food market and playground in Elmhurst, Queens, and scripted with poetry from Javier's collection OBB, a.k.a. The Original Brown Boy. But first, the WBAI fundraising request.
Oh.
WBAI is transmitted to you through a tower at Four Times Square.
Oh.
That transmitter costs $17,000 a month to spread our sound. And guess what?
What?
We are in arrears.
Uh-oh.
What? Yes.
So tonight. We are asking you to contribute to the WBAI Tower Fund by calling 212-209-2950 or going online to WBAI.TowerFund and making a pledge in any amount.
That means probably around $25. If you do that tower.fund, you get to see a scale of choices like 25, 50. Uh-huh. Do your best, everybody, listeners, please. Because as you may know, you should know, by design, WBAI depends on you listeners, not corporations or commercials, for its survival. Yes.
No. Listener support means no WBAI.
And no transmitter, no WBAI. And so please help in this month's Tower Fund campaign.
And keep our signal strong and loud.
Yeah, and keep independent media and free expression in the arts alive. I keep saying this.
Yeah, you do.
We live in lousy times. Let's not make them worse.
No. So support WBAI.
And support the arts. As the great filmmaker Federico Fellini said,
censorship is advertising paid by the government.
That's right. Well, certainly not paid by us. Anyway, and now, on tonight's show, we'll be joined by filmmaker Lynn Sachs and poet Paulo Javier to discuss their collaboration on Lynn's docufilm Swerve, set in the Hong Kong food court and nearby playground in Elmhurst, Queens, and inspired by and scripted with lines from Javier's poetry collection, OBB, a.k.a. The Original Brown Boy. Lynn Sachs makes films that embrace hybrid forms and cross-disciplinary collaborations, incorporating the essay, collage, performance, documentary, and poetry. It's hard to believe, but she crams all that into even the shortest film, which this is only 7 to 8 minutes long, Swerve. And with each project, she investigates the connection between the body, the camera, and the materiality of film itself. She has appeared here a number of times to discuss a number of her previous films, including Your Day Is My Night, The Washing Society, and Film About a Father Who, all great films which you can explore after this show is over because you don't want to miss this discussion. Paulo Javier describes his latest book, OBB, the inspiration for Swerve, as a, quote, weird post-colonial techno-dream pop comics poem, end quote. It was published in 2021 by Night Book Press. He has since produced 3 albums of sound poetry with Listening Center and was the recipient of a 2021 Rauschenberg Foundation Artist Grant. From 2010 to 2014, that's a very long run, he was Poet Laureate of Queens. That is a big long run for Poet Laureate. Hong Kong Food Court, by the way, in Elmhurst, is a gathering spot for immigrants and working class people from the neighborhood. After premiering at the 2022 BAM Cinema Fest, Swerve will screen July 15th and 17th at the Museum of the Moving Image as part of the Queens on Screen series. Well, about time, Queens on Screen. Is that a long running series? Because Queens is a long ignored borough, even though you have a sculpture garden with Noguchi sculpture in it. You have the house of Louis Armstrong. You have there are a lot of Queens artists who deserve enormous amounts of recognition. And Mr. Javier is the latest among them. And let's talk a little bit about, I mean, Lynn, we've heard about your other collaborations, your collaboration with your brother, your collaboration with that wonderful labor organizer in the Washington Society, whose name I can't, my mind is not. Lizzie Olesker, who was so great. It was such a wonderful movie about the people who do washing and washing in laundromats. And so you always act on your inspiration. And I wonder, you were a reader of Paolo's before you began, obviously, you began making this. But what was it in his poetry particularly that was so appealing and knocked you out?
Oh, that's a great place to start. Actually, this is our second collaboration. Ah. The first was another collection of poetry and another collection of sonnets. And it's very interesting to me that Paolo embraces this, call it like a familiar form, the 14-line sonnet, and then right. He just turns it inside out. And I was drawn to Paolo's work because of his attention to the language of the street. You could call it quotidian language, the ways that we as filmmakers are always trying to be engaged with reality. But then through our lens, we transform it. We warp it sometimes. We celebrate it. But we give ourselves, especially in the experimental film realm, we give ourselves like the permit, the self-issued permit to really reinvent what we've seen and to have that then shared with our viewers. And for me, Paolo does that in such an extraordinary way. His work has like a way of addressing the daily life of the city and a kind of compassion for the city. I mean, you could go to Walt Whitman and his celebration of New York City, but yeah. He's also has his own methodologies. But I mean, I think there's actually an interesting place to start with Walt Whitman in a sense of like being grounded here. So maybe I would like hand that over to this is good on radio. Here we go. Paolo, we've never talked about Walt Whitman.
Actually, I'm sorry I didn't quote him really, because he certainly has enough to say about the courage to, sing out, particularly to sing out. But can I ask you a question first before we move entirely away, from the sonnet form? The sonnet, all us English majors know, are 3 stanzas of 12 quatrain of 4-line quatrains, is what a quatrain is, and a couplet summing up really whatever is suggested in the body of the previous 12 lines. How do you turn it on end? Do you start with 2 lines and go forward? I mean, what is your secret, I'll call it recipe, because this is set in, so much of this is set in a food court. It could be some, a recipe for writing a sonnet.
That's a question for me. I call it a sonnet, both in the most traditional, but also most fluid and experimental sense. It's obviously a sonnet, and specifically a Shakespearean sonnet, because it's 14 lines. 14 lines, and that's Shakespeare's invention. At the same time, it's not strictly Shakespearean, because it does not adhere to a rhyme scheme per se, at least end rhyme scheme.
The last two lines.
And the last two lines, the couplet. But I think just from decades of absorbing Shakespeare and also reading Shakespeare through New York school poets like Ted Berrigan and Frank O'Hara and Bernadette Mayer, you hear Shakespeare, you hear those rhythms within the line itself. And that's possible because of what I think the sonnets that I work on do to syntax, right? Due to syntax. And that's really explode syntax, where word order, depending on how you read a word, opens up multiple meanings. And that has everything to do with me really, as Lynn observes, really embracing being in the city. And you mentioned Whitman, Lynn, and Janet. I think that's really important because I am a student of Whitman's, but I think for this particular sequence of sonnets, I connect to Whitman through Ted Berrigan, who is an endless inspiration for me. And so same with Bernadette Mayer, both of whom really turned the sonnet form on its head while also paying homage to it and adhering to it when they were publishing individual works on the sonnets in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Well, you know, what I haven't done is introduced you as a Filipinex. You are from the Philippines, and I assume your first language was not English, though I don't know. But where was your where? And you've been all over the world. You lived all over the world, including Queens.
Yeah.
But so where is your attachment to Shakespeare? When does it where does it begin?
Well, let me answer your first question. I'm born and raised in Manila, so that's the city. In the Philippines, and my first language was actually English. My parents decided to raise me in an English-speaking household, knowing that as soon as I step outside of it, I'll be speaking Filipino, or what the dialect is called Tagalog. And I encountered Shakespeare in the third grade, and that has to do with the Jesuit Catholic American education that we all kind of have to abide by, and it's very strict. It's not even traditional. And my aunt, who I look like and who lived two blocks away and was my English tutor, she's an English teacher at a public school, she taught Shakespeare. And so I had to actually memorize and perform soliloquies in the third grade. So I have Shakespeare as really formative experiences of poetry. Right. You know, in the Philippines, you can't ask for a more dislocated setting.
Yeah, right.
You know, but the globe, right?
Yeah, really. But the Catholic school attended to Shakespeare. That's interesting. I mean, in the third grade, I think we were practically still reading Dick and Jane. It's very impressive to hear how advanced really your poetics were at that early age, right?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't give myself credit for that. That's really me trying to be a good student. I memorized, soliloquies from Julius Caesar at a very young age.
Well, right.
And the fact that I'm memorizing poetry is definitely out of step with – there's no recitation anymore, not even in independent schools or private schools in the United States. But, I think outside of the U.S., Catholic private schools, pretty much everywhere else around the world, pretty higher standard and set of expectations in terms of understanding of literary history and form. So
it's not the Supreme Court.
Actually, I wanted to say something about the word that you chose to talk about your upbringing or heritage and then the trajectory that you followed. And that's around dislocation. And I think that has so much to do with many artists in New York, which is that we traveled here for reasons because we felt at home. We felt at home as artists, though this was not our home. And there's a way that Paolo's work, particularly I think OBB, really sends us into that cosmos of dislocation in this fantastic way. Like dislocation is then almost like this word I really love, dépaysé, like it's a French word, but kind of works in Spanish and other like to be out of your country. And then you have a realization. And there's a lot of fantastic things going on in his book. And so we will, I know, get to the film, but it had to do with like, well, what language would you speak in the country of poetry or Paulo poetry?
And what's that word for the something péage?
Dépaysé, like
dépaysé. You're
like
removed.
Pays means country, or país.
Like your déclassé, your denuded of your country.
Which, and when they use it in, I'm not trying to like to have a French lesson, it also means disoriented, which I think like disoriented is a good space to be in, so that if you're always oriented, then you always think you have a kind of authority, or you know where you are and who's around you. And so I like occasionally be in a space of disorientation.
Yeah. Well, every space besides New York is has a little more orientation, but
that's true.
But now let's also talk about the concept of swerve, because you embraced it and the film embraces it. And while I can see it happening in the film, I'm not sure I could explain it in my own language that I'm attached to in regular sentences. Somebody quote says, words each operate on their own swerve. Now, does that apply to the camera as well as to the poetry? And is that the kind of understanding that you had to attach to each other before you could begin shooting? Did swerve mean the same thing? That's a line from Paulo's work, by the way, that swerve word and sentence. So how did you, it must have caught your fancy, because you named the film after that concept of language swerving, swerving.
I named it because I'm a listener. Paulo and I are both very active listeners, and so are you. And I heard him use the word swerve, and I must admit, I had no idea that the provenance of that word is deep. And so I'm going to pass it over to Paulo, because when I said, Paulo, I love that word, let's call this film Swerve. And then he educated me.
Okay. This is the time the building begins here.
So Paulo.
Anyway, Paulo, so explain your connection to swerving.
I think swerving I think is something that is tied to Lucretius and his really of the moment, always of the moment poetics, the nature of things.
The right? Epicurean.
Epicurean.
Pleasure.
And I think all experimental poets operate on Lucretian thought and follow some version or manifestation of Lucretian poetics. So there's that. And I think it also ties back to what Lynn's talking about in terms of dislocation. And I think why I'm working with Lynn, and film of all artistic forms is inherently dislocated. Right. It starts at a dislocated place. There's no real center in filmmaking, and filmmakers piece things together. And they're just by the nature of their art, used to swerving and arriving at a center coming from different places. And that's just in terms of the material aspects of the film, the sound. That has to, you know, compel the image and vice versa, maybe negate each other, but that offers new meaning. And I think when this idea came up, I think I was just on a phone call with Lynn and I was talking about it, or maybe there was a recording. Lynn wanted me to explain my thoughts about how I put my poems together. And I really wasn't like laying out anything prepared. I was also extremely exhausted from both childcare and doing work. But automatically,
Regular work, actual
regular work. Yeah, regular date, like 9 to 5 on the top of childcare, but it was happening simultaneously because
And what were you doing? What were you doing?
At the time, if I remember correctly, this was in 21. I think I was teaching. I was on my new job.
Teaching what? Teaching write poetry? Teaching writing?
Is it? This was in 21. It's 22. Yes. I was teaching. I was about to start. I was in training. I'm teaching English. I'm back. Back in the classroom. I took 4 years off from teaching, and I found myself in a new job and having to adjust to all that. And working with Lynn was my wonderful swerve and distraction. So.
Okay, let's swerve for a moment here to a little musical break, and there's no reason not to include jazz in the discussion of swerving, since it's definitely a Lucretian type of music. And what we're going to play now is Clifford Brown and Max Roach, their quintet, and the tune is called Dahoud, and we'll listen a little bit to that collaboration. Interrupting the piano solo, always a choice thing too. You're either doing that or interrupting the drummer, and he's the partner on this, Max Roach. Anyway, that's considerable swerving, I'd say. Yes, this is Cat Radio Cafe. I'm Janet Coleman, here with a filmmaker, and if we could have her as a regular resident, it would be great, Lynn Sachs. Great to have her any time of day or night. And Paolo Javier, the poet and an experimentalist I'm curious to know whether you're experimenting with an assortment of languages besides the one that you were that your parents so appropriately made you learn to speak first. But do you teach language to foreign students, to people who speak a second language, English as a second language?
Actually, when I first moved to New York, my job, I taught Filipino. I taught Philippine language and culture at NYU. Huh. So I have a background as a language teacher. Huh. And that was one way that I made a living here in New York City. Right. And I obviously am an English literature teacher. I teach American poetry. I teach the novel. And I live in New York. And I think... though it may look like English, you hear the other languages in the English. And that's, the permission given to me by Gertrude Stein, John Ashbery, right? Francis Chung, a lot of my idols.
That you hear as many languages as your ear takes in.
Yeah. Like sensitive. Gertrude Stein really showed the way for me where you, there's a lot of punning, you hear combinations of words, and you actually mm-hmm. hear Yinglish, Yiddish,
yeah.
German, and then French, and then she's mm-hmm. punning on three different languages, mm-hmm. and that's the dexterity of an English unfettered, right? And mm-hmm. just freed of syntax.
Yeah, an unfettered English makes it any all languages. Then it's not English necessarily at all, is it?
It's all, yeah. It's yeah, well, not proper English by any means, you know.
Right, so we don't need proper English, correct? Well, that's Yiddish almost. Is the
I love Yiddish. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great one. It sure is. So let's talk a little bit about the film itself and how you happened to choose the Hong Kong food market in the neighborhood of in Elmhurst. I think I've been to... I know Elmhurst Avenue is one of the most famous subway stations on the independent train grid, but you very seldom get out at it. I think I once had to go there because the only way I could collect unemployment insurance was to go to the office in Elmhurst. But other than that, had I known there was a Hong Kong food court, I might have been more excited. It was exciting to get unemployment insurance at the time, but anyway, it was... you know, how you picked it and what were the aspects of the place that were so appropriate for the poetry and for the camera and for the actors who were part of this film, important part.
So in many ways, the whole collaboration and project started with Elmhurst in mind. I mean, Elmhurst, sadly, has been in the newspaper internationally for the last 2.5 years as one of the parts of New York City and thus the United States and the world, places, locations where the COVID hit the hardest.
Of course, right.
And, you know, it's as if that it was, it's like it was made famous by the struggle and
the hospital,
which is only a couple of blocks away mm-hmm. from that market. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, many of us celebrate Queens in particular for being so fantastically international, mm-hmm. so full of languages. And we've been talking about like the concept of language, but if you just talk about the number of languages, I think Queens wins out. I could be in New York City for all the array of dialects mm-hmm. and the fact that these cultures are living together in a way that's just so fascinating and so much a part of what draws us to the city. So the other thing about it was that the food is really good in Queens. I think Queens mm-hmm. gets the award for best food mm-hmm. way above Manhattan for me. So I've always felt that way. And so I was thinking, okay, we imbibe food and drink and eat and devour food. What if we could make something that says, do the same thing with poetry? Love it. Eat it. You don't mm-hmm. have to always parse it out. You don't always have to analyze it. Just like feel it. So that's why I wanted to shoot the film in Queens and also Paolo knows Queens far better than I do. Mm-hmm. He had taken me and my family to the Hong Kong food market or food court, it's officially called, and I knew what a fantastic place it was. So I said, let's shoot the film there. But we picked August 2021 to shoot the film. Yeah. And every day we say, is this the end of the pandemic? I don't know. Like, we thought the pandemic was
simmering down.
And then Delta virus started. And so the food market was pulling itself out of a hole, and then the Delta virus variant appeared. And then we said, I guess the show must go on, but we're going to wear masks. So we decided to shoot the film in Elmhurst nevertheless, but we were super careful about our protocol. And I actually think as a result, the film becomes a kind of a time capsule of a liminal period in which people didn't know what to do. Like, I think the center of the whole film is when one of our performers, her name is Emmy Cathedral. She's speaking and then she pulls down her mask to whisper something else. And then she puts it back. Right. And that's that space we were all in. And we kind of, maybe we're going to be in the rest of our lives. Who knows? So the film is composed of a certain period of time in pandemic history. It's a certain location that's, like, I hope really exciting for even for New Yorkers to see, because they might not know it. It's not as famous as other parts of New York, but should be. And then maybe, Paolo, if you want to talk about our fantastic performers that both of us picked together.
Yeah, talk about them, because they're all kind of beautiful and resonate with their own pleasure in saying these words.
Thank you for saying that. We agree.
Yeah, they're charming, beautiful, and just interesting looking people. And they are interesting. Some of them are actors, some of them are writers. They're a mixture. They're all artists themselves. And so, but they seem to be having fun with, you know, tasting the words that they're, you know, almost as much as that pineapple tea or the soups that they might be ordering, yeah, which also look fantastic. And I hope we do go back to the food, because, I mean, this is not a food court like a hotel in Montreal. This is a food court with delicious
food. I love
looking
that you
food.
Say they taste the words. Like, that is exactly what Paolo and I wanted.
Uh-huh. Well, you gave them a lot to chew on, but they seem to be enjoying themselves so much, putting these, you know, words together and saying them to each other, you know, behind the masks. And the masks do become, you know, a sort of theatrical, well, actors do wear masks. We have comedy tragedy masks. So it kind of uses the mask in an interesting symbolic way, whether you intended it or not. Yeah. So talk about how you taught them to read your lines, if you taught them at all. Did you just let them run free with them or what?
This is Lynn's film, and I really, I really stepped as far aside as I could, but Lynn is so gracious and generous and wanted me to just be beside her throughout the whole process. But I think, Lynn can probably feel that. I will say that, in terms of, casting, you have two performers who are from Queens. You have Emmy Cathedral, and then you have Ray Ferreira. They're both from Queens. Emmy grew up in Maspeth, but that neighborhood was a familiar haunt for her because one of her best friends lived there, and she spent many a weekend or weeknight after school there. And Ray also frequented that playground growing up in Corona. And they're both artists who I had the chance to be in the Queens Biennial with back in 2018. And then just Jeff Price and Ine Prakash, who have their feet firmly planted in the world of cinema. Jeff Price actually took the mask a step further and wrote all over it. A really incredible unscripted move on Jeff's part, but Lynn and Sean Hanley, the cinematographer, really found the multiple entry points for the viewer to glean, you know, that decision of Jeff's. And Jeff is a hero of mine. Jeff actually, his films sustained me at the first year of the pandemic. And it's just really by chance of community that Jeff became involved in this. And that's courtesy of Lynn. So maybe Lynn, you could come in. And
well, I wanted to say that jazz connection, which the first film of Jeff Price's that I saw was a film I'm guessing maybe one or both of you have seen called Let's Get Lost. It's about Chet Baker.
It was made
in the 80s.
One of the great
he
films
shot that
about
film.
Jazz. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, Jeff shot the film?
Yeah, Jeff shot that film. And
is he the guy with the pineapple juice?
I don't know. He was the cinematographer on that
film. I'm just trying to.
So I don't know if he was in front. I don't remember whether he was in front of the camera, but he has.
I think that was
Ine.
That was Ine.
Oh, you mean in our movie? In our movie.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
Movie.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No. Jeff is the one with the mask. He's got gray hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
He was a cinematographer in the 80s.
A little older and a little chubbier than the others. Am I right? But very fast.
He's not chubbier, but he is older. Yeah.
Okay. And he sits on a park bench.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And he's great. Yes, he's really interesting.
Totally
figure.
Wonderful. Yes. Yeah. So he is very, very involved in the underground film community, alternative experimental film community, but also very much a part of the music and film community. And he made films that Paolo had seen with music by R.E.M. Is that right?
Yeah, he's made R.E.M. videos and Mariah Carey videos. So he really has his foot in so many different genres or types of filmmaking. And he's working on a feature film right now as director.
I was just going to say, you know, we didn't necessarily ask people who were accustomed to being on movie screen, you know, or in front of a camera lens, but people we thought were really interesting and would, I wanted to ask people to be in this film because they would read Paolo's poetry and play with it and engage with it in a kind of like thoughtful and inventive way, which they all did.
They all did.
Juliana Sass is maybe the youngest, and she's an actress, an up and coming actress in New York, but she majored in poetry in college. So I knew she would really check in with this. So everybody brought different sensibility. Ray Ferreira is performance artist. Emmy is really, like, I call her a bibliophile and a cultural organizer. So they have like all these ranges. And then the neat thing about filmmaking is we spent one day together and now it's as if they all know each other.
Right. That is the amazing. Connected. That film was shot. It is truly between 7 and 8 minutes long. It's not but it is jam packed with action, with, you know, with food, with people, with with these flying sentences and words swerving around, and everything is swerving around, really. The hands serving food, the people munching and so forth, and kids interrupting whatever it is that you're doing. That's part of the playground thing. They're just people hanging out there. So Lynn is a great director, and she's manipulating. I don't know if that's the right word. She directs her actors who are in documentary film to adjust to how to perform without performing and make it a documentary film, even though they're conscious of their presence in a film. So how did you do it with these folks who weren't necessarily, they were scholars and whatever? What was your secret sauce?
I wonder you have a radio show on culture, because you have to every week go to a different kind of culture. But that is a very astute way of looking at my work, because I'm interested in an aspect of a documentary practice, which looks not just at the real world, but how people perform their lives. So to my mind, if you ask someone to engage with a poem, then they are involved in a cerebral way. They're also involved physically. Right. And so I like to give them a lot of, opportunity to invent their lines. So, like, for example, you were asking about Inay Prakash. I should say he is a programmer at the Maisels Documentary Center. Ah. So he comes out of like a whole community up in Harlem. So, you know, community of activism and art practice. But little did I know he'd actually performed even on Broadway or near Broadway, but whatever we say. But he, you know, he also knew
near
how
Broadway.
To, yeah, whatever you want to say. There's a way that he actually memorized Paolo's poem down to the last syllable. And so he did something like what you did, Paolo, as a kid with Shakespeare. He did
he learned
with
everything.
Javier. He did with Javier.
Yes, he did. His recitations, right?
Yeah.
You mean he practiced them with you? He went over and over so that he could get every word right?
No, he actually took it upon himself to really absorb the language. And there was some discussion about, you know, me hearing them perform in advance, and I said no, I really, these poems don't really feel like they're mine anymore. They're the films, but they're certainly the films because you've made it you know, cinematic, and it's your own. So I'm a Virgo, so my immediate inclination artistically is to not be in control. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting for a sonnet writer, sonneteer, to not want to be in control. I guess the sonnet saves you in some way.
Shakespeare saves us. If we write in English, the bard is really, truly indisputable. And every time I go back to Shakespeare, I am, you know.
I don't think the bard ever rhymed savage with cabbage, though.
I don't know. I mean, he has a character who's has a donkey head, right?
That's true.
So
that's true.
Named Bottom, right? Named Bottom of all names. So
that is a good pun. Oh my god.
Right? So
yeah.
I do want to say in terms of Lynn's direction and using the features of documentary filmmaking, I learned a lot from being beside Lynn in the making, the shoot of this film, and then after Lynn's decisions in terms of editing, because I had the really rare opportunity to see different iterations, different cuts, and being working interior and then exterior. For me, all I could hope for is that included in the shot would be this neighborhood that has only been realized in the news as a place of tragedy.
Yeah.
Right. And grief.
Yeah.
And not resilience and life continuing, and seeing all of these different communities being a part of each other, which, you know, you don't see in the binary narrative of the media, and certainly not in a neoliberal, right?
Right.
Culture that we're in.
Let me just tell everybody that they're listening, in case you just joined us. You're listening to Cat Radio Cafe. I'm Janet Coleman on WBAI here at 99.5 on the FM dial. This is Cat Radio Cafe, a weekly program, Tuesdays at 9. And talking to the great filmmaker, experimental filmmaker, and her sense of experiment really doesn't seem to stop, because she is grabbing for everything in the environment and in the beyond the environment, in the past and the present, and very much in the present. And her collaborator on this, Paulo Javier, who seems to have grasped a lot of the tools of Lynn's artistry. And one of the tools, I mean, you love words and photos and whatever you can put into a picture that's relevant, there it is. So sometimes the words of your poems are there in big letters, just seemingly at random. How did you pick from his harvest of wordplay? To enlarge on the screen, I forget exactly, but I think Savage Cabbage was one of them. It have to be, because that's how it. I remember it so well. But there were a number of other phrases that popped up on the screen as well. You know, yeah. In letters, that so that it was introducing a whole other, dimension, that there were actual words. What was that about, and how'd you pick them?
I picked the words, the ones that just seemed really explosive to me or playful, but I also picked them because I actually sometimes was stuck with them based on what was, I mean, in filmmaking, once you shoot it, it's there. So you you have somebody saying it, and you have somebody like Ine Prakash, and he's talking about the endless monologue, and he uses the term and he says it like in this very like a delivery on a stage, because he has that capability. And I love, like, people, usually if you go to a play and you're like, oh my god, the endless monologue, it's like a it's an insult. But here it's sort of saying we all have our endless monologues, and it's part of how, like, we claim our space and the in this city, we all are, you know, like, may we all go out on the corner and just speak. And it seemed right. And so I wanted to have those words on the screen. But the other thing is that I don't like films about that deal with poetry that just reminds you that poetry is an oral experience, because poetry and is a experience of reading as well. And so the relationship of words to a page and how words look in juxtaposition is really important. And so for me, the words on the screen also they have an activity within them. Like we put some Super 8 film within the letters. So the words are alive graphically.
Right.
They're also alive on the screen, the design of the screen. And then they're alive in relationship to like daily life in Elmhurst, Queens. So I just thought it was important to remind us that these are words. They are things.
Right. And they're also menus, by the way, and they're names of all these food stalls. So that they, you know, pop out at you too. And they're in other languages usually.
Actually, that's really true. We have the words for the food stall restaurants, and we have the words for the poetry, and they kind of have similar weight.
Right, they do. I couldn't actually make out the words on the menu, but I wanted to.
Actually, can I say one thing? Because the film is showing at the Museum of the Moving Image on July 15th and 17th. And the other film is a feature film because ours is a short film. And it's, Paolo, I was wondering if you would say a little bit about it because you've seen it and I haven't. It's by Paolo Mendoza. And the cinematographer is a man named Brendan Young. And I have been told that he is one of the most extraordinary cinematographers working today. And actually, our cinematographer, Sean Hanley, loves his work. So it's like an honor for us to have our film with next to another Queens originated film. So, Paolo, maybe you would say something about that film.
I mean, Bradford Young is the name of the film, the cinematographer of Entre Nos. Mm-hmm. Between Us by Paola Mendoza, so I share her namesake, so that's pretty cool. Bradford Young is probably more famously known for being the cinematographer on The Arrival, science fiction film, one of the most beautiful science fiction films that I'll ever see, and just a moving film about language and connecting across species. But I think in terms of Lynn finding a form, right, in the space that awaits her. I feel like that for me is why I love her work. Like Your Day is My Night. Your Day is My Night is one of my all-time greatest cinematic experiences.
Well, tell what that's about because that she could have gotten so much humanity into those little bedded slots. What do we call those places?
Shift bed apartments.
And I have to say, you know, one of the main reasons why, you know, I have no hesitation to work with Lynn is because I trust the gaze and I trust her, you know, sense of participating in something that's larger than just, you know, being a director and a filmmaker it's about space.
Well, her thing, her thing about the laundromat, I mean, better than Waterworld.
Well, and she, you know, it's theater
comparison.
It's theater. It's new documentary. It's docu-cinema, however you want to call it. I think of Isaac Julian looking for Langston as part of this,
I have a little story about Isaac Julian. So actually this last week I was invited to join the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Science.
Oh, well, congratulations.
And so was Isaac Julian.
Clapping
class together. And I really love Isaac.
That's amazing.
Paolo, I would like you to say something about your book. OBB.
She couldn't stand talking about herself.
Well, I failed to add humility and just grace, but I think that's pretty obvious when you watch Lynn's films. So this is my book. It's called OBB. It's hard to see. Can you see
it? Well, nobody can see it.
This is radio, so we're okay.
OBB, and it's you can't see it. Sorry. And it's a hybrid work. It's inspired by comics with a K as much as with a C and ending with an X. And it's an experimental work that I call a comics poem. And it really does inhabit the
moments. It's a techno-something comic poem.
It's also, you know, inspired by techno music and also dream pop. So it's it's all over the – it's all of the genres that I love, and I found a way to bring it into one book. But really, it's comics and poetry, finding a form and a way to be in the same space.
Just as Shakespeare would have done had he lived a little longer.
the bard is – omnipresent. The bard never leaves us. Never leaves us. You know, I have to say. But I do want to say one more thing. The poems that Lynn chose to include in her film actually appear in a part of the book that doesn't have any images, but they're experienced like images because of the white space, and suddenly you have like a sonnet following all of these images. So I feel like there's so much.
So there's a lot visual within this book. And say the name of the publisher again, and how does
it's
anybody...
a Nightboat Books and Nightboat. Nightboat Books. It's called OBB, Nightboat Books. And they're this wonderful independent experimental press based in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And
fabulous, where everything apparently is going on, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah. So.
So Greenpoint, Brooklyn, who'd have guessed? Well, and let's go over also the information about the museum. What's the address, and where do they get? How do they get tickets and so forth?
I'll give the address.
Okay. I was just there. I just took my daughters there before our interview. I took them. It's in Astoria. Yeah. So Lynn, you want
it's
to give
the address? It's in Astoria, right?
Yeah.
So the Museum of the Moving Image is at 36-01 35th Avenue in Queens, New York. And we'll be there on Friday, July 15th at 7:15 p.m. And we're definitely doing a Q&A with the director of the film program, the museum, Eric Hines. And then the film will also show on Sunday, July 17th for a matinee at 1:30 p.m. And I plan to be there for both shows.
Great.
But there won't be a Q&A, a formal Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
After that one, but we hope people will come either night, and on the 15th, it'll be quite social.
Great. So you mean the first one is social?
The first one, because
Q&A and schmoozing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Schmoozing included. Yeah.
I would like to add, if this might give further incentive to your listeners, there's a current exhibition on The Walking Dead that's,
You want to see that.
So,
yes.
So okay. Go for the check out the exhibition before you see the film. So,
well, to me, your collaboration. I mean, I know from Lynn has stretched the boundaries of film, particularly documentary films, to where you really find it is new definitions, or forget the definitions, because you're in for quite a visual and mental trip watching anything of hers. And to add your language and to understand the way she can make that one of the many, you know, one of so many layers, and to have it be the predominant one, the one you hear and the one you might, you know, retain forever. It's just extraordinary that you guys have put this together. And as I say, it's only 7 to 8 minutes, and yet you can't unglue yourself from it. You learn so, you know, you take in so much. So I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I hope there are many more to come. And you stay in touch too, okay, Paolo, because you're quite an amazing combination, really. I'm thanking you so very much. And I know we'll see each other again, right?
We will.
I mean,
I'm a big fan of WBAI.
Hey,
so,
now we're talking.
This is a real hype for me that I feel like I've achieved. So thank
you. Yay! I'm so glad to hear that. You have been listening to Cat Radio Cafe, heard Tuesdays at 9 p.m. on WBAI. I'm Janet Coleman, and you are?
David Dozer.
The displaced playwright. Sure. You can reach us at catradiocafe@gmail.com, and you can make a pledge in any amount to our tower fund. That's how we'll pay for our transmitter rent, by calling 212-209-2950.
Or online at, online at WBAI.TowerFund.
That's 212-209-2950.
Or WBAI.TowerFund.
Very perfect. Special thanks to Bob Auld. On tonight's show, we were joined by filmmaker Lynn Sachs and poet Paulo Javier to discuss their collaboration on Lynn's docufilm Swerve, set in a food market and nearby playground in Elmhurst, Queens, and scripted with poetry from Javier's collection OBB, aka the original Brown Boy. Both collaborators will be present when Swerve screens at the Museum of the Moving Image on July 15th, and one of them will sneak back on the 17th as part of its, that's the Moving Image, Museum of the Moving Image has a series called Queens on Screen. Charmant, no? See you next week.
Bye.
WBAI's next report to the listener is scheduled for Tuesday, July 12th from 10 p.m. to midnight. Join me, Linda Perry, WBAI's program director, along with Bertol Reimers, WBAI's general manager, for this month's report to the listener. That's Tuesday at 10 p.m., July 12th, right here on Pacifica Radio, WBAI New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation board responsible for advising local management and operations, is meeting Wednesday, July 13th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held on Zoom, and you can join the meeting by phone or on your computer. There will be an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar and on the WBAI website. You can also get into the meeting by calling 929-205-6099, and enter this meeting ID, 922.457.2995. 922.457.2995. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5.
Oh, jeez.
So, I guess I can't play my promos on this computer because we have big mouth people ready to report to the listener. Oh, my. And somebody, and this thing crashed, so we have nothing up and running. WBAI New York, where technical difficulties are a way of life. And in just a second, perhaps we will be able to present something to you in the way of audio. Oh, now it's going to load. There it is. Totally empty. By the way, if you run a radio station and you have an opportunity to get something called Card Player, don't do it. Try something different. Oh my. Here we go. All right. I'm going to play this LSB thing again because, you know, it cut off the last time when the machine crashed, so I think you deserve to know about tomorrow's LSB meeting. And then the report to the listener here on WBAI New York.
Come on, people now. Smile on your blue. WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board, responsible for advising local management and operations, is meeting Wednesday, July 13th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held on Zoom, and you can join the meeting by phone or on your computer. There will be an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar and on the WBAI website. You can also get into the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. 929-205-6099 and enter this meeting ID 922.